Okay, hello and welcome to the show today. It's Jordan Vonk here, just currently in the pool, so I hope that the wind isn't too bad. If it's terrible, I won't publish the episode, but if it gets up there, it means the wind wasn't as bad as I thought it might be. But just thought I'd do the episode today. I just got off the phone with a friend and we were talking about beliefs, and I was just thinking about the power of belief and how beliefs have shaped my reality and also the way that beliefs have impacted my recovery. And so when I say beliefs, what I'm talking about are the ideas that I hold that I no longer question. And so a belief is basically just an idea that I have that I've put so many pieces of evidence against that I no longer doubt that it's true. And if I no longer doubt that it's true, I don't question it and it becomes a filter. And then as I move through the world, I filter reality through that belief. And so why that happens, right, is because the brain can't process the amount of information that exists in the world. There's actually so much data right now. If you just look around, there's like so many things actually happening. like right now there's trees, there's leaves, there's birds, there's a pool, there's sounds, there's sensations on my body in the pool, there's the taste in my mouth, there's like a car driving past. If I start actually trying to look for all of the things in the present moment, there's so much information that my brain literally can't process at all. So it creates filters, it deletes and it distorts. It literally just cuts information out and it just gives me what it thinks I need. And so that's basically the role of our beliefs. Like an example of this is, have you ever bought like a pair of shoes or a bag or something like that and then walked down the street and started seeing those exact same shoes or that exact same bag everywhere in the supermarket? And the reason, and you go, yeah, am I seeing more of these now? And the answer is yes, you are, because the brain's now made that a priority to focus on. It's actually put that bag and those shoes higher up in the filter list. And so we start seeing it stops deleting all that information. It starts focusing it into our everyday experience. So that's the way beliefs actually shape our experience. And so what I was thinking about before was the limiting beliefs that we hold about ourselves, about alcohol, about addictions, about the way the world is that keep us trapped. And so the area that I spend most of my time in my life is on addiction recovery. And I think that probably dovetails into personal growth. So when I got sober, I decided that I was going to do whatever it took for as long as it took to figure out how to not drink again. And I realized very quickly that not drinking was the beginning, but learning how to live without alcohol was like, that was the thing that I had to actually learn to make this goal of sobriety a reality. Because if I couldn't learn how to live and manage my feelings, my life, my existence without needing to escape, then I wouldn't last a very long time. You know, eventually I'd need to numb myself back out. And before I quit drinking, alcohol and things like Valium and cocaine and ecstasy were the first things I would choose for that. And so as I went through this personal growth journey, I started looking at my beliefs. And the first belief that I had to look at was, what does alcohol mean to me? Like, what is alcohol? And the answer I had initially was, alcohol is a magic potion that makes my life problems go away, gives me confidence, takes away my anxiety, makes me feel good, and lets me hang out with all my friends, and makes me more attractive to women. This is the best thing that I've ever found in the world. I want to do more of it. So I was like 16, 17, 18. I loved alcohol. Oh my God, this is the magic potion. Why didn't someone tell me this earlier? And then as I evolved and got a bit older, and you know, early 20s, alcohol started becoming like more prevalent in my life, and it started becoming a little bit of a hindrance. Weekends were still fun, but I'd go on these big benders and then I'd wake up hungover and my work would be impacted in a negative way and be spending all my money, and all of a sudden alcohol became problematic. And so I had these like mixed feelings around alcohol. On the weekends, I loved it. It was just like magic potion. But Monday to Friday, it was a hindrance because I'd wake up hungover, work would suck. Then I'd drink again on Tuesday or Thursday and like I'd be scattered for work again. And so started changing my beliefs. What does alcohol mean to me? That was the belief. What is alcohol? And what does alcohol mean to me? And then as I got into my mid-20s, I started seeing alcohol as a problem because it started becoming not just no longer a magic potion, it started becoming a problem potion where I would drink it, I wouldn't even really get the good effects anymore, and I'd just get drunk and belligerent. And I'd just sort of be waiting for that magic to hit. And then all of a sudden I'm the drunk guy at the pub smoking someone else's cigarette in the beer garden, getting like, hey man, that's my ciggy. I'm like, oh, sorry, bro. Or, bro, that's my beer. What are you doing? I'm like, oh, bro, my bad. Like, just drunk and messy. And then I would black out and I would miss work, or I'd have fights with my partner. Or I'd wake up and I'd spent like $1,500 in like 3 days on coke. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? And so alcohol then started becoming a negative. And then I was like, so what does alcohol mean to me? And alcohol meant to me like problems, but I couldn't get rid of it. And it became a monster. And I'm like, so now I don't even want this shit. It's making my life worse, but I can't get rid of it. And so I was like, what the fuck? And so then I felt really confused. I didn't understand, how do I have these mixed feelings towards alcohol? On one hand, I don't want to drink it anymore. It's no longer a magic potion. But for the longest time, it worked so well. I think maybe, just maybe, it's because of something else, like my depression or the medication or the stress at work or the diet I'm eating or the lack of exercise or the shitty friends. Like, I kept thinking it was all these other underlying factors that had changed my relationship to alcohol. And so I was like, I wasn't willing to give it up because I kept waiting to turn the other outside cogs to make the magic potion work again. And eventually, after a series of rock bottoms, I remember one in particular. I was living in Bondi at the time, and I'd hired out the bowling club for my birthday. I just turned 25, and I had all my friends flying from interstate, my family, and had this big shindig, right? And we had bands and music and jam nights. It was a cool night. It was going to be fun. And we were all out playing lawn bowls and drinking, and it was early and all that stuff. And then by like 8:30 that night, I was like three pills deep. I was fucking drunk as a skunk. And I went up to do this birthday speech and I was basically incoherent. I mumbled some like garbage to my family and my friends about something. Like, oh, I'm an alcoholic, whatever. Stumbled off the stage, grabbed a bourbon glass and smashed it into my forehead. And cut a big gash right in the top of my head. And started bleeding all over the bowling club. I had no idea this was happening. I just thought I'd smashed a glass and it was a fun party trick. Then my sister runs up and goes, what are you doing? Take your shirt off. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, you're bleeding everywhere. I was like, whoa. And then like, so anyway, this is my party, Bondi. This is like 09 when all the glassings were happening. So shut the whole bowling club down. I'm off to hospital. My friend Jay, hope you don't mind me mentioning your name, Jay. Shout out to Jay Rawlins, the man, drove me to hospital with my other mate, Jimmy. Shout out to Jimmy Ray. And so I go to hospital. 100 other people from the party get kicked out onto the street. I get stitched up. I come back and one of my other mates had taken all the people back to his place, shout out Black Rat, to party. And so now all these people have spent all this money to come to this place to spend time and celebrate my birthday. And they're all in my mate's little apartment, trashing the joint. He's hosting the party for me. And I'm back there, stitched up, doing lines of cocaine, wondering what I'd just done. And then the next day, I'm out for breakfast with my mum and dad. And this was the rock bottom moment, right? So all of that was embarrassing. It was stupid. It was dumb. But I guess there was like this young guy part of me that probably glorified that lifestyle a little bit back then. But I went out for breakfast the next morning with my family. And I remember being there like, obviously like hungover as, coming down off whatever I was on from the night before, pills, coke, whatever. My mum said, oh, so did you have a nice night last night? And I just ripped her a new one over the middle of the cafe. I was like, what the fuck do you think, mum? I had a fucking terrible night. Got up and stormed off. And I just remember seeing everyone's face, just like shocked. And I just remember walking off and like it was a reaction. It was probably like, because I was so probably ashamed and embarrassed of what I did. And I was also in like heaps of like, I was coming down. But I'm not trying to justify it. I'm just like, I was like, whoa, bro. And I walked off feeling about 1 inch tall. Like, I just blasted my mum for asking a question about my lewd conduct and my, like, lewd's probably not the right word, like, ridiculous conduct from the night before. And I just remember walking away from that. And I just remember thinking, mate, you've lost your way. You have lost what it is to be you, because that's not the way I want to respond to my mother. And in particular, when she's literally done nothing wrong except drive, like, 6 hours to Sydney to spend time with me, watch me embarrass myself in front of our whole friends and family, and then take me out for breakfast the next day. And so that was one of the rock bottom moments that I had. And I actually quit drinking 2 weeks after that. There was another event that happened. I'll talk about that at another time. But that was one of the moments when I realized, what did alcohol mean to me? What was my belief around alcohol at that stage? My belief around alcohol was that alcohol is a fucking terrible, destructive potion, poison. And it's turning me into someone that I don't respect. It's turning me into someone that is making his family worse. It's turning me into someone who doesn't fit into society anymore. It's turning me into someone I'm not proud to be. And that was the beginning of my turning point to give up. And 2 weeks later, I decided to leave Sydney and move back to my parents' property to start getting sober. And so there's more to that story. Like I said, I'll share that another time. But that was the beginning of the end of my drinking. And so the belief filter that changed was that I realized that alcohol didn't make me better. It made me worse. And it didn't strengthen the best parts of my nature. It actually brought out the worst parts of my nature. And all of the confidence that I thought it gave me was all just false. It was all bravado. It was all bullshit. It was all just fake. And I decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. And I had to figure out, how do I do that? And so that's what the next step of the journey was all about. And I'm sure we'll cover that in the next few episodes. But back to beliefs. So that was the moment that alcohol became no longer a positive in my life. And then it really became a non-negotiable about 2 weeks later. And as my beliefs changed, I no longer saw alcohol in the same way. I no longer valued alcohol in the same way. I no longer celebrated alcohol or what people did with alcohol. And I no longer wanted to identify as someone who was related to or engaged with alcohol. I started detesting alcohol and I started thinking alcohol was actually disgusting. And very slowly, but very powerfully, I developed a new belief. And that new belief, that new filter, was that alcohol is literally the worst thing I could do in my life. If I would rather eat, this is going to sound a bit crazy, but like I'd rather eat horse shit than drink alcohol. Like literally. Like, and I know that's a crazy thing to say, but literally, if you'd put a glass of beer in front of me or a bowl of horse shit and you said, you got to eat one of those or we're going to like kill your dog, I'd be like, well, where's the spoon? Because I'm going to eat me some horse shit because I am not touching alcohol. And that is what, for me, that is what the power of belief can do. It creates a filter that shifts our perspective, but it also shifts our decision-making process. It actually creates a new orientation for what we will and we won't stand for in our life. It creates a new standard for what we will and we won't tolerate. And it's the beginning of all change. It's the opening of a new opportunity, and it's the closing of an old chapter. And so how do we form beliefs and how do we shift beliefs? So I'm just going to wrap up with this. The way that we form beliefs is we take an idea or we take a behavior, like something like drinking alcohol, right? And we put an experience next to it, aka I drank alcohol once. What happened was I got dopamine and euphoria, right? I had a pleasurable experience. So my brain created a reference point that alcohol equals positive. Then I did that again and again and again. And I stacked so much evidence that alcohol was a positive, because every time I drank it, I got dopamine or positive connection or confidence, that I did it so many times that it formed the belief that alcohol was good and I stopped questioning it. I didn't question it for years. So to make a belief, you take an idea, you take something and you put evidence against it. So many times that it becomes irrefutable. And once it becomes irrefutable, it becomes something you don't question unless there's a strong, powerful shift that questions it. So for a few years, I thought alcohol was the wonderful potion until I started having negative experiences consistently with alcohol. It stopped working. And then I had that big experience with my family where I embarrassed myself. And then I ripped into my mum and I felt like an absolute terrible person for doing so. And I felt like I betrayed one of my biggest values, which is my family comes first. And so that shifted my belief. So I took the idea of alcohol and I put another experience against it, which was ripping my mum a new one and totally embarrassing myself in front of my whole town and friends. And I started changing what alcohol meant to me. And I also started drinking and it not working. So I was like, I'm doing this thing, I'm getting a different result. It's becoming negative. And eventually what happened is I stacked so much evidence against alcohol and I stacked evidence to the negative side of alcohol, that eventually the belief changed. And that belief is still the belief I have today, is that I put so much irrefutable evidence against alcohol that it was garbage, that it was literally the worst thing I could do. And I'm not saying for anyone else. Anyone else wants to drink, that's their choice. I'm not judging anyone's choices. This is for me, right? And I said, alcohol is literally trash. It is poison. And if I touch it, I'm basically sacrificing my own well-being. I'm basically going against everything I stand for. And it's pure betrayal of who I am. And so from there, I now have a new filter. I have a new orientation. I don't drink. I go to pubs and dance. I go to dinner and eat food, but I do not drink alcohol. I go to festivals and I dance. Like, I don't like hide from like living life, but I looked around and I said, like, what do I want? And like, my belief was like, we don't want to drink alcohol. So I just stopped doing the things that led to drinking. I stopped hanging out with people who drank. I stopped celebrating alcohol. I stopped talking about it as a positive. I stopped going to bottle shops. I don't celebrate people when they get drunk. I don't think it's funny when people are super intoxicated. I kind of think it's a little bit sad because it just reminds me of who I used to be. And so now my whole perception's totally shifted, and that's all because of a single belief. And so that's pretty much the episode today. I just wanted to touch on that because I was talking to a friend about beliefs, and the idea that one belief can change our whole reality is something that I've experienced. And if you're drinking and you've got a problem with drinking, you probably started with the belief that alcohol was a positive, and it started moving into like alcohol's probably not so great, and it might be leading towards alcohol is actually terrible. And if you're on that journey, then fantastic, because in my opinion, alcohol is fucking terrible for human beings. It's a poison. It ruins our brain. It takes, you know, ruins our life. There's almost no benefits to drinking alcohol. And so if you're on that journey, stack as much evidence as you can. What I would do, and what I still do whenever I try to change a belief, is I just start writing out all the negative consequences of something, and I just make that list really, really long, and I just look at it. Okay, that's a terrible, terrible list of evidence. And the more evidence I stack, the stronger it goes, and eventually you hit that switch point, and the brain shifts. And just like when you buy the new shoes, and you start seeing the shoes everywhere, when the belief shifts, you start perceiving reality differently. You start viewing alcohol differently. You start viewing people who drink alcohol and get really messy differently, and you start a new orientation for your life. All right, my friends, I hope that was helpful. I would love to hear people's feedback or comments on that stuff. Please leave a comment below. I'm starting up a group, a Facebook group. It's for high achievers that want to quit drinking without rehabs or 12-step programs. I am not anti-12-step. I am not anti-rehab. But some people don't want to go to a 12-step program, and some people don't want to take 3 months, 30 days, 9 months out of their life and go to a treatment center. They want confidentiality. They want the convenience and privacy of getting sober at home, confidentially, online. And so if you are one of those people, you want to join a tribe of people, you can join the Facebook group. I'll put a link in the show notes. I won't be in there right now because I'm in the pool, but I'll update the show notes probably in the next 24 hours. And yeah, please leave a comment, like and subscribe, share it to your friends. Thanks, legends. See you next time. All right. Hello and welcome to another episode. Jordan Vonk here. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about values. So yesterday I talked about the power of beliefs and how beliefs can help us shape reality. And in particular, I spoke about my journey through shifting my beliefs around alcohol being a positive for my life, and then alcohol becoming a negative, and then ultimately deciding to no longer have anything to do with alcohol. I kicked that bitch to the curb and good riddance. Today I'm going to talk a little bit more about values. And so when I say, what are values? So values, as I understand them, are essentially the beliefs and principles that we think are important in life. And so each of us think certain things are important. And so we prioritize those things and we make decisions based on those things. And often our values are formed early in life through our upbringing, through our community, our parenting, our schools, churches, etc., etc. And we develop them so early on that they become essentially locked in frames of reference for us. And so whenever we're looking at, do I want to go and do something new? For example, do I want to go to the gym? At an unconscious level, our brain will be like, well, what does that mean? Does it mean this? That will it meet this value? Will it meet that value? Will it get in the way of this other value? So for example, if you have a value of, let's say, family, and then you say, oh, I want to join the gym, I want to get fit. And then your brain goes, yes, going to the gym would be good because of the value for health. However, family is the most important value, and you already don't have that much time spare. So instead of spending your time at the gym, let's spend some time with the family. You'll actually just choose family. You may talk about wanting to change your health a lot. You may feel guilty for not changing your health a lot, but you won't actually change your health because it conflicts with the other higher value of family. So that's the basic way that I see, anyway, that values sort of shape our decision-making process. They are very similar to beliefs. However, there's a little bit more of a hierarchy with the values. We have a series of values that we prioritize as important, and we'll choose the first value normally over the second value, or the second over the third. So for example, if family is the first value and health is the second value, if it comes where I've got to choose family or health, I'll choose family. And so that's how our decision-making process will work in that hierarchy. If the third value might be like making a difference, like having a meaningful life, I've got this project I could do, which means I can create this meaningful life, but it's getting in the way of my health, or it's getting in the way of my family time, I will cut back on that meaningful project and spend time with family or on health. So depending in the order in which the values are structured, depends on which ones we will choose and prioritize in any given moment. And so understanding your top half a dozen values, super important, because it means that you can actually understand how you're making decisions. And what's cool is once you understand what you value, you can create better ways of meeting those values. I call it diversifying your portfolio. So in a similar way with like investments, you know, they say investments, don't have all your money in stocks or shares or property. Diversify it. Get multiple different ways, like multiple different vehicles to put your money in. A little bit in stock, a little bit in real estate, a little bit in whatever, cash or whatever. It's similar with your values. If you know your top value is, let's say, family, then you can start looking at, well, how diversified is my portfolio of family time? Like, do we just do the same two things every day with the same three people? Do I want to add in a 20-minute ritual with my kids once a week here? Or do I want to do a different holiday? Do I want to like find ways to incorporate health and family so I can get both my values happening and get this result and save time? So it's like we can diversify our portfolio of values. When we get clear on what our top five, six values are, we can start making better choices. We can fit things in. We can combine things. We can get more awareness. So that's really the power of values, is that they give us the essentially the target that we want to hit in life, and then we can reverse engineer our goals off our values. So if we know what our values are, we can start setting goals, making plans, and making our life more fulfilled. And another reason why this is so cool is that once we understand our values, like, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. A bird just flew in. I'll give you an example of someone who understood a lesson about our values early on. His name's Matt Damon. I'm sure you've heard of him. Matt Damon. He's the guy from Good Will Hunting. He's in a bunch of movies, Jason Bourne, etc. There's a story of him when him and Ben Affleck won the Oscar when he was like in his early 20s. And he said he was so like excited to be at the Oscars, and just getting invited was like an incredible experience. He's surrounded by celebrities. He's wearing a suit. He's this big shot all of a sudden. And he actually won. He couldn't believe it. Him and Ben Affleck went up there and they accepted the prize, and said he went back to his hotel room and just was sitting there just like in a quiet sense of reflection, almost in a state of shock. And he looked up at the Oscar and he realized that he's really glad that he won it today, but not for the reasons he first thought. The reasons why he was glad wasn't because he actually got the achievement. It's because he realized the achievement wasn't going to fulfill him. It didn't really mean all that much. And he looked at some older people in Hollywood that he knew who had these incredible lives, who made millions of dollars and traveled all over the world and made meaningful films, but because they never won an Oscar, they felt like they failed in their careers. And so that was an awareness that Matt Damon got, that he got to understand his values so clearly, that this thing that he thought he wanted didn't make him happy. And so he was able to let go of this like false belief that this external recognition was what was driving him. And those other actors never understood that. And so they're miserable, and they've lived a charmed life, but they're miserable and depressed and they feel like they've failed. And really hit me, that story, because I actually had a very similar story, a very similar experience with alcohol and drugs. So when I was a teenager and I was very anxious and I thought that life was terrible and I was never going to fit in and make it and stuff, I drank alcohol and felt fantastic, right? And then I got all these great results. Like, I started getting confidence, started getting more attention from girls. I felt like it was a magic potion. I talked about it in the last podcast. But what I also thought was that if I could just get to the pinnacle of like the rock star style life, which when I could just drink and party all day long without any responsibilities and had just like you know, girls giving me attention and enough money to drink and do as much partying as I wanted, I'd be as happy as I could possibly be. I'd be like a pig in shit, just stoked. And anyway, I got there. By the time I was 22, owned a house, had fucking tons of money in the bank. I had girls giving me as much attention as I wanted. I had as much powders and alcohol and whatever I wanted. I had boats and cars. I could do whatever I wanted. And I remember being in my bedroom, depressed with a girl that I was seeing, knocking on the door saying, hey, what are you doing? Can I come in? And I was like, this is what I thought I wanted. This was my Oscars moment. Like, I've got the house. I've got enough money to survive. I'm having as much fun as I possibly can. I've got this great girl. I've got all the things I want. I've got friends in the lounge room. I was like, everything that I thought was going to give me that Oscar moment made me miserable. I achieved my goal. But here's the thing. That goal didn't align with my values. See, I was incorrect in assuming that this vehicle, this drinking and partying, this freedom lifestyle was going to make me happy. And it didn't, because I don't value that. I didn't value what I'd become. I didn't know I didn't value it. That's why I was confused and depressed. So I just drank more. But as I got more clarity on what matters to me in life, it's like, having a meaningful life is really important to me. I've always wanted to make a positive impact. It just doesn't matter what it was. Even when I was a kid, I was like helping people and making cakes for other friends. And like, I just always had that streak where I would feel happiness when I was contributing to others. And when I was partying and doing drugs all the time, it was just all about me. It was me drinking, me partying, me getting attention, me this, me that, me. I was just sick of myself. I was like, oh my God, it's just, I'm bored. And so, yeah, so that was my moment where I was like, dude, this isn't making me happy at all. Like, this is fucked. And so I made some changes at that stage because I didn't know what my values were. I just left. I just ran away. I did geographicals. I moved up to far north Queensland, lasted like 4 months up there, drank myself out of every pub and hotel there and had to move home. And then I got home and I slowed down and I stopped partying so much and I started focusing on like, just going to the beach and bodyboarding, and cooking good food, playing music again, hanging out. I started getting happy again. And I didn't know what it was. I thought it was because like, oh, this depression had passed me by. But what it was is I was actually starting to live with my values again. I was starting to be a part of a community. I was doing stuff. I was mowing lawns for people and I was feeling positive again. So I just wanted to share that quick talk today about values, because getting that clarity and understanding the map, the target, helps us create the plan and then we can follow the map. And so if you want to understand, well, okay, it's an interesting little story you told there, Giordo, but how do I understand? How do I find my personal values? Well, believe it or not, it's very, very simple. It's so simple that I missed it for a number of years trying to do all this complex therapy stuff. So the way you find your values is you sit down, you grab a pen and paper, and you ask yourself, what's most important to me in life? You might say, my kids. Great. What else? Spending time with people I care about. Awesome. What else is important to you? Going to church. Fantastic. What else is important to you? Looking after animals or the fucking less fortunate. Fantastic. What else? I love training and personal growth. Fantastic. You just literally like there's 1,000 different things it could be, but most of us, believe it or not, know what we want. If you just take a moment to sit down and ask yourself, what's most important to me in life? Come up with half a dozen. You can come up with more, but the top five or six are the real big ones. If you get 12, 10, 12, 11, that's fine as well. And then once you've got them there, once you've written down what's most important to me in life, get that list of half a dozen or so, and then ask yourself score them. And the way you score them is you ask yourself, which one's more important, being with my family or making a difference? And then you go, which one's more important, being with my family or going to church? Which one's more important, being with my family or helping sick animals? Which one's more important, spending time with my family or traveling the world? And you just literally do that for each of the values. So you ask yourself, pick the top value on the list and compare it to all the other values on the bottom of the list. And as soon as you get one that beats the value, put it above it. I think I've just confused everyone. So like, basically you just want to have a list of 5 or 10 values. You get the first value and you compare it to all the other 9 values. If one of the lower 9 values is more important than the value that you're comparing it to, sit it at the top of the list and then start comparing it to the other 9 values under it. And just keep doing that until you end up with all of the values in the top 10 order. And so if that's too complicated, which it might be because I didn't explain it super well, just look at the list and ask yourself, is that in the right order? and just look at it and go, I think that one's got to go above and that one's got to go above. That is actually effective about 80% of the time, just that simple one. So if it feels too complicated from what I said before, just look at the list and go, is that in the right order? Doesn't feel right. Keep adjusting it till it feels right. And they're your basic values. And then once you've got your values, you can just look at them every day and be like, okay, so spending time with family is my number one value. Am I doing enough of that at the moment to feel like I'm feeling happy? What am I doing specifically to meet my value of being with my family? And what else could I bring in that would make life even more wonderful with that? Can I combine being with my family with some of my other top values like health or caring for others? And just start brainstorming new ways to live your values-driven life. So yeah, that's the basic podcast today, my friends. Why this is relevant quickly to alcohol and addiction recovery is that we need to have a purpose-driven, meaningful life to not feel like we want to go back to the old ways. So as you get sober, as I made a decision to live alcohol-free, I realized that living alcohol, like quitting alcohol, was the beginning of the journey. That was like step one. Nothing's going to get better unless I get rid of the thing that's ruining my life. Step two was, well, then I need to build a new life. Because if I keep the old life the same way it is with like all the stress and all the frustration or all the whatever it was that's causing me to want to drink, I'm not going to last long term. I'm going to end up going back to the old life. So figuring out what are my values and then building a plan, creating a map for what you can do to meet your values, coming up with a bit of a direction and orientation for your life to just keep building an awesome sober life with like a beautiful, beautiful, like conscious awareness of your values. That's how you start building a meaningful life. And as you do that, you realize more and more that the alcohol was actually just a crutch for the lack of meaning and the lack of purpose I felt. I wasn't feeling good enough inside for some reason. And nearly always it's because we weren't surrounded by people who were meeting our values, or we weren't taking action in our own life that was in alignment with our values. So getting sober and giving up alcohol long-term and not living a meaningful, purpose, values-based life, very rare. I see people who give up alcohol all the time. They don't understand their values. They don't set goals. They don't build a new plan that makes their life meaningful. And they end up just relapsing. It's like holding their breath. Eventually, they're going to get so much negative emotion built up in their body because they're just not living that happy life, that the negative emotion has to be dealt with some way. And because there's not enough positive emotion to balance it out from the values-based life, alcohol becomes a choice. It becomes the only choice eventually, and that's why people end up going back to it over and over again in my experience. So that's a little tie-in to why the values and understanding your values are so important to actually living an alcohol-free life, is that happiness and positive emotion is the game. Negative emotion is how we relapse. Positive emotion is how we actually live actually stay alcohol-free long-term. And we can't create lots of positive emotion if we aren't living true to our values. So my friends, hope you enjoyed the episode. I am taking on some clients at the moment. So if you are interested in one-on-one coaching for alcohol addiction recovery, please reach out to me at vonkjordan@gmail.com. That's vonkjordan@gmail.com. I work exclusively with I work exclusively with high-functioning alcoholics earning over $200,000 a year who do not want to go to a traditional treatment center, like a traditional treatment method, like a rehab or a 12-step program, or spend like 10 years on the therapist couch working on all your triggers. If that's not for you, if you're the type of person that wants a simple, private, confidential, like convenient from your own office or lounge room, then I'm your guy. I've been sober now for 14 years. I've worked with literally hundreds of people over the last 10 to 14 years. 10 to 14. As you can tell, it's Sunday morning, so my words aren't coming out so great today. Anyway, point of that little plug was, if you want help, you're a high-functioning alcoholic earning over $200,000 a year that wants to work with an exclusive, confidential online coach that has walked the walk and not only talked the talk, then I'm your guy. Hit me up at vonkjordan@gmail.com. And yeah, let me know. We can book an appointment. We can have a chat. If we think we're a good fit to work together, we can. If not, enjoy the episodes. Peace out.